Mother of three, currently in my 30s, and this happened on Christmas Eve of last year. Around this time, my boyfriend and I had split up due to reasons I won't go into, but needless to say, it was for the best. A quick side note, I had been in several toxic relationships before, but not nearly as bad as this one. I had three children, all boys, one being 14, another being 7, and one being 9. With my oldest being 14, he had helped me wrap the gifts for his siblings that night, as it was already hard enough for me. For the sake of this story, I'll call him Jake. Being a mother preparing gifts alone was not easy, especially with such a short amount of time. It was around 2 a.m., and my oldest and I had just gotten finished wrapping presents and got ready to go to bed. As I was placing down the last present, Jake taps me and points to the living room window. Seeing that it was pitch dark out, I couldn't see anything but the faint snow outside. It wasn't until I looked a bit closer that I noticed what appeared to be a dark figure peering into the window. I took a step back in horror when I came to the realization that there was someone watching us. I'm not sure how my son saw him, but I'm glad he pointed it out nonetheless. Growing up, I was always taught how to deal with situations like this. I didn't freak out or anything, but I figured I'd use a more constructive approach to deal with it. I go outside with my son behind me and straight up tell the person to please leave and that they had no business being here. By this point, I was able to see that this person was actually a woman. However, there was something clearly off about her that made my son and I both feel really uneasy. We weren't sure as to what it was, but if we had to say, it had to be her eyes. She then plays stupid and begins to apologize and said that she was just trying to scare her friend. She then claimed that she had the wrong house and then went on her way, constantly staring back. That was the last we ever saw of her, but my son was always skeptical about what her actual intentions were.
Just to give a little background information, I grew up in the deep rural South, where almost all of labor was seasonal. There was always many, many Hispanic families blowing through the town during the seasons, usually harvesting related. They would get to town and fill absolutely every rental and open every property in town. The economy would literally boom for 3 months straight, maybe even four, then the cycle would shift once again. These families would pass through generally two or three times a year, before the winter hit, and then they all moved on. The harvesting and agricultural work dried up with the winter change, and so did our buzzing little economy. So around Christmas time in the late 80s and early 90s, me, my cousins, and all my friends are having a sleepover at one of my friend's house during one of our rare snowstorms. This particular friend's dad was ex-military, had a pretty cool collection of surplus gear, namely a pair of night vision goggles. This was one of the reasons we liked to conglomerate at his house. There's just always cool shit to play with. As I explained before, this is the deep South in the middle of winter, so as you can imagine, there's even less to do than normal, especially for a bunch of kids that can't even drive. We went and manned the windows so one could look out at the snowfall. I think we were playing something akin to Army base, so we were pretending to be scouts or lookouts and would call for an approaching enemy. Then someone would hand the goggles over to us. It was a fun way to share the coolest toy we were allowed to play with, and also keep us entertained. It felt like we were on a special mission, and every movement counted. Also, the snow and surrounding woodland looked unbelievable, way cooler than it does in the movies. You can literally see everything in motion. That's when we noticed something strange. Consistent movement coming from the nearest neighboring house. Now, this house had been abandoned for a couple of months at the time, as we all knew the family that had moved. We don't know exactly what happened, but suddenly they were getting out of town ASAP. Probably something to do with the wishy-washy economy. Either way, even the kids of the family that went to school just disappeared one day, and that was that. No one ever moved in, no for sale sign, just a big, empty, kind of creepy house in the corner. This house, in the moment, doesn't appear abandoned. Faintly, and only with the help of the night vision goggles, we could see a light on in the attic. It almost appeared to be wavering or dying, maybe turning on and off. There's just something inconsistent about how it reads through the goggles. We took turns passing them around, trying to guess what we were all seeing. So as a group of teenagers tend to do, we decided we need to investigate. We went to the mudroom and started layering up on our warmest clothes for the mission at hand. Flannels, denims, coats, and then an outer shell. Black gloves and beanies came last to keep us hidden in the dark. We felt like this little paramilitary unit. Although the truth is, if anything decided to kill us, there wouldn't have been shit we could do to stop it. We were barely 12 years old at the time. We navigated the woodland rather than use the road. This made us feel even cooler. Kept us out of sight of any potential watchmen. I think we all believed there was going to be an enemy, or a great mystery. So we decided we needed to sneak up on it. Sure enough, we step onto the property and there's definitely a light on the attic. It's a candle, flickering back and forth beyond the single slat window that we can see through. The wavering of the flame was what made it inconsistent through the NVGs. If it blew too hard, it almost looked like it went out. We stood there in the cold and just stared. Clearly, there was someone inside of this abandoned house. Someone who probably shouldn't be in there. There wasn't a chance of any of us getting any closer to the house to actually look around. We knew the porch to be creaky. We'd give away our position. We slunk back into the tree line and just watched for a bit. Chased what the slender shadows we could see moving around in the attic up there. After a while, the chill got us. We retreated back to the house, where we continued to monitor with the night vision goggles until we had to go to bed. We agreed we'd investigate for real when the sun was up. The next morning, we all trekked back over to the house and, not seeing any more light from the attic, made our way inside. This was easier than it should have been, but as mentioned, we knew that kid used to live there. He showed us the loose windows and doors that failed to latch. We slipped in without much noise and closed everything behind us and then waited. We wanted to make sure no one saw us come in. After a few minutes of silence, we began to look around. As expected, the house was completely cleared out. No furniture, no decor, nothing. There were stains on the walls from where the pictures had been hanging. The drawers and cupboards were totally empty. There wasn't any evidence of a squatter, vagrant, or serial killer. There was only one place left to look. Now, this could have been just us teenagers having an overactive imagination. But I swear that when we pulled open the trapdoor to the attic, a cold wind rushed past us. Everyone from the front of the line to the back felt it, which is why I still don't deny that it happened. This wasn't the most unbelievable part, though. As we climbed up into that attic, we noticed it was just as barren as the rest of the house, save for the one central feature. There, in the middle of the attic, was a bloody sacrificed lamb nailed to a crucifix. Those of us in the lead that actually got into the attic had a full meltdown, screaming, backpedaling, trying to get away from the carnage. The smell was horrendous, and there at the foot of the crucifix were a pair of burnt out candles. We ran back down the ladder, then down the hall, and barreled through any manner of exit that we saw fit. No one bothered to close anything behind them. After that, we made a tear through the thicket and back to our friend's house. We went straight to his dad and told him. This is the same military dad with all the badass equipment. We were actually elated it was him that we got to tell. No one was more prepared than the guy with the machine guns and night vision goggles. He didn't really have the reaction that we wanted, though. He laughed and laughed and told us to just carry on. It was only after 20 minutes of breathless pleading did he actually start to listen. We went over it as detailed as possible, from last night until now, of exactly what we'd seen. Our friend's dad tucked a pistol into his waistband and then wandered over to the property. He poked around for a minute before he came hustling back and called the police. There's a big story, a big report, and it never went anywhere. Like I said at the beginning, Because of the nature of the town we lived in, there was always weird people rolling through, which meant weird shit was always happening. In the South, we also had the misfortune of having our law enforcement caught up with the tail end of the satanic panic, so they didn't really have the urge to get to the bottom of it. My cousin says he thinks maybe it had something to do with the weird sect of Catholicism or something. But the scariest part to us is that we almost went into the house during whatever ritual was taking place. It could have been us nailed to that crucifix.
This happened on Christmas Eve of 2021. My brother, who was 22 at the time, and I, a female 31 at the time, lived together in a city about 2 hours away from our hometown where our parents still live. I'll call myself Riley and my brother Shadow for privacy. Our mother's birthday is Christmas Day, so as a family, we've always celebrated her birthday on Christmas Eve growing up. However, now that my brother and I are managers at our jobs, sometimes it's harder to get the day off to be able to travel home. Luckily, that year we were able to work it out and actually come home on Christmas Eve, and later on in the story, for the safety of my parents, I'm really glad we came home that extra day early. We get home on Christmas Eve at about 5 in the afternoon. We have our mom's birthday celebration with cake and presents, just the four of us. Me, Shadow, and her mom and dad. It was a great time. Winding down that night, we had decided to watch some Christmas movies to get into that holiday spirit. Dad tends to fall asleep pretty easily when he sits down, so he was starting to nod off at about 20 to 30 minutes into the movie. Shadow and mom are talking on the other couch, and I'm distracted by my phone, when suddenly there's a loud knocking at the door. It's nearly 9 p.m. at this time, and we were not expecting anyone. To help visualize, the front door has a window in it, but the glass is designed in such a way that it lets light in, but you can't actually see inside. I'm sitting on a couch that is directly in front of the door, further in past the foyer into the open vaulted living room, as well as the kitchen open concept. I can see a figure standing there, and for some reason, my stomach sank, and I felt really scared all of a sudden. I almost feel like my body knew something was wrong, but my mind hadn't caught up yet. I slap Dad lightly on the arm to wake him up as the guy knocks loudly yet again. In his half-sleepy state, I tell him, "Dad, someone's at the door." Well, he gets up and opens the door instead of using the home security system to talk to this person, via the doorbell camera. I can't remember specifically what the man at the door had said, but it was an older guy, probably mid to late 60s, and he kept repeating to my dad,
"She's here. I need to see her."
The stranger did say a name, but I don't remember the context, so for the sake of the story, we'll just call her Sandra.
"Sandra lives here. She has my medicine, and I need my medicine,"
he repeats to my dad. Nobody named Sandra lives here, sir. You have the wrong house," Dad said back. I felt my heart start to race as I jumped up to the door, feeling the need to help. Shadow and Mom jumped up too, and eventually all four of us were at the door telling this man that he had the wrong house, when suddenly he began to force his way past my dad, nearly knocking him over. Now, Dad is not a small man by any means. He's over 6 foot tall and over 300 pounds. I couldn't believe at the time that this scrawny man had been able to catch my dad off guard. In what felt like slow motion, I hold up Dad as he, Shadow, and Mom start trying to close the door. The man had his hand on the door's edge and refused to let go, still managing to push against all four of us. Shadow begins to punch the man's hand on the door repeatedly to get him to let go, taking about 6 or 7 punches before the man lets go in pain, and as he falls back, the door slams shut. We lock the deadbolt quickly before the man has a chance to try and open it again. The stranger immediately begins banging on the door so hard that it feels like he's trying to break it, and all the while screaming for this Sandra woman. I immediately decide to call 911 while my mom tries to go find something to defend us. We've always lived in this city, and my parents never owned guns, so the only thing my mom found was a rather large sturdy rolling pin. Better than nothing at the time. Right next to the door in the wall was the security camera pin pad, where we could see the man pacing back and forth from his car to the door to bang on it some more, still calling and screaming for Sandra.
Sandra, I know you're in there, so come out. Give me my medicine.
I had gone to my childhood bedroom, which was also at the front of the house, to see if I could see the guy while on the phone with dispatch. It took about 15 minutes for the police to finally show up. In that time, the guy had walked all around the front of the house. It felt like he was looking for a place to get in, but my parents had a privacy fence all the way around, so we got really lucky with that. He also randomly had a bag in his hand at one point, which he didn't have initially. I thought that was strange. The cops pull up behind the man's truck, which was in our driveway. One starts talking to him near our front door, while the other stands closer to the guy's vehicle. I don't remember all of the conversation, but they ask him why he's here and what he wants. The man tells them again about Sandra and his medicine. The taller cop starts walking to our door, as the other cop convinces the man to walk back towards his truck. My parents open the door to the cop, as I then rejoin them from the bedroom. We explain to the cop what had happened, and we tell him how the guy tried to force his way inside the house. Dad also tells him that they've lived here for over 10 years, and have never heard of this Sandra. Dad goes outside with the cop, and eventually we find out that Sandra is my parents' new next-door neighbor, who had moved in less than a month prior. The man was her ex-husband. They had only been separated for less than half a year, and were still doing things for one another. And that included Sandra picking up his medications for him. She also explained that during the time he was banging on our door, when I had seen him going to the side of the house, he had actually gone and got the medicine from her at the house next door, and yet came back to our house and continued to bang and yell on our door for her for some reason. That was the bag that I'd seen in his hand. The cops took down our information, and he let the guy go on the grounds that he wouldn't come back, and he agreed. I don't know what was going on with him mentally, and the cops never got back to us on anything, so I guess it was just forgotten about. All I know is Christmas Eve will never be the same for us, and I'm really glad Shadow and I were able to come the day early, because if we hadn't, I don't know what would have happened if our parents had to go through that all alone. Stay safe this holiday season, everyone, and don't forget to always check the door before opening it. Whether that's through the peephole or your doorbell camera, don't risk it, and be safe.
My name is Jordan, and this happened on Christmas morning of 2012. Seeing as this was about 12 years ago, I can't remember every detail, but I'll try my best to explain everything that happened. Ever since I was very young, I lived with my aunt and uncle throughout my childhood. Long story short, my mom was a major meth head, and my dad spent a long time in jail. Because of that, they were in no position to raise a kid, and that was why I went to live with my extended family. Ever since then, I felt happier around them, where they actually cared for me and my well-being. Anyway, it was Christmas morning, and me, being the excited 6-year-old I was, went out into the living room. Stocked under the tree were a bunch of presents and gifts. It was a child's dream come true. At that point in time, I ran to my aunt and uncle's room and waked them up to tell them that Santa had come. As tired as they were, they sucked it up and came out to watch me open my presents and just appreciating the Christmas spirit. I'd say it took us a full hour to open all of the presents before cleaning up all of the open wrapping paper and other trash. As I was holding the trash bag open, I thought I could see something from the corner of my eye by the stairs. That's when I look over and see two pairs of shoes walking upstairs. Being only 6, I could only assume it was Santa, and I dropped my bag and ran towards the stairs. I remember just looking up at the top of the stairs when my aunt asks me what I was looking at. I just responded with Sansa and pointed up the stairs. This made my aunt and uncle laugh it off as me being imaginative or trying to be funny in some way. My aunt comes over to me and grabs me by the hand and then looks up at the stairs when she saw it. At the top of the stairs in the guest bedroom was someone hiding behind the door. The room upstairs was dark, so she couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman. My aunt screamed at the top of her lungs and told my uncle to call the police. This caused me to start crying as I didn't understand what was going on at the time. According to my aunt, whoever was up there didn't bother trying to run and just sort of stayed where they were hiding. Our neighborhood was located not too far from a police station, so they were able to get here pretty quickly. However, in similar situations like this, whoever we saw upstairs was gone. He got away with it scot-free. We always kept our doors locked at all times, so it would be extremely difficult for someone to just break in like that. Mind you, we had a dog too, so the fact that he didn't sense that someone else was in the house made the situation even more weird. This made my aunt and uncle believe that whoever was in our house was someone we knew. We almost never used the upstairs, as it was only for guests or for company staying over. My aunt had some valuable stuff in the closet of that room, nearly $5,000 worth of stuff, and most of it had been taken. Police had found no evidence as to who it might have been, and we aren't sure as to how they got away. My uncle believes it had to be through the upstairs window, but that hasn't been confirmed nor denied. 2 weeks later, my uncle had went upstairs to fix a pipe that had apparently been leaking when he found something disturbing. In one of the closets upstairs, he had found various kitchen knives stabbed into the wall along with several food wrappers and a sleeping bag. The sleeping bag being my uncle's. Whoever it was had been living in our home for God knows how long and had since been eating our food. In fact, this explains why we were so suspicious about how our food had been disappearing so fast. While my aunt and uncle believe it could have been someone we knew, I believe it had possibly been a squatter seeking shelter. This would explain why they were eating our food and why they had stayed in the house. We haven't seen that person since, and I'll always remember what happened that one Christmas.